What is Facebook coin? It is not a cryptocurrency. It is, in fact, a financial ecosystem that Facebook is building from the ground up under the moniker of the Libra Foundation, which has partners that include Uber, Vodafone, Andreessen Horowitz, and some other things you may have heard of called Visa, MasterCard, PayPal, Stripe.
Coinbase.
You can't
forget them.
And many, many others. Coinbase is their, like, token legitimacy to call themselves a crypto. I don't know if they really wanted to work with them or not, but Coinbase is there.
Hold on, before you, I think you just made a very big accusation there. What would define cryptocurrency, and why is it not a crypto then?
It is beyond just a cryptocurrency.
I like to think of cryptocurrencies as, like, the whole idea of it being borderless and censorship-resistant. This is going to have censorship completely, like, as part of it. You know, you're not going to be able to send Libra to and from Iran, for instance. Like, it's just not going to be legal. Or to North Korea.
Right. So, to touch more on that, what does it mean to be a financial ecosystem? So, Bitcoin is a cryptocurrency. It's used to make payments. Ethereum is beyond just a cryptocurrency. It's a blockchain. It's a platform that you can develop on. And what Libra intends on having is, first of all, it is a blockchain. Aside from just a cryptocurrency, you can develop apps on top of it. You can make cross-border payments with it.
Cross-app payments. That's what I think is going to be interesting. Payments. You know, it's going to be like, look, say you have your Uber credit. Like right now you have Uber credits and you have Lyft credits and you have maybe some PayPal bucks and then you have all these different private currencies. So what Facebook is doing is essentially saying like, hey, you have Uber credits. Backing an Uber credit is, you know, one Uber credit equals one Libra credit. Or maybe it's just all going to be Libra, right? That wallet will be integrated in all these different apps so that you'll be able to use your Uber credits, which will be Libra, to buy groceries at a store owned by one of these VCs or something like that.
Yeah.
So they're just going to make cross-app payments really, really, really effective.
Yeah, that should be interesting. In addition to that, one of the things that will make these cross-app payments possible is a brand new smart contracts platform.
Yes.
Which is written in their own language, which we'll get into in a moment.
They invented a new language. Why don't we get into it right now?
Well, we have one other thing that they're doing in this financial ecosystem that is a big deal, and that's open identity management, which means you can open a bank account without the documents of a driver's license or a birth certificate. I assume they're going to try and use some kind of biometrics or other way of proving identity, which is not a unique thing. It's something that's already in development in the crypto space, but it is definitely unique in the banking world. And in their white paper, they say they're going to target the billions of unbanked people to try and include them into this financial ecosystem for the first time. So this is a very, very big deal when it's all put together.
Yeah.
So getting into the technology used, it's going to be one giant distributed Merkle tree. If you know what that means, you're excited. If you don't know what that means, you don't care, and we're not going to convince you to care. What is interesting is the Byzantine fault-tolerant consensus model. So they're going to have these staked nodes that all of their partners are going to run to then verify each other's transactions and prove that no one is lying on the network. The interesting thing about this is it costs $10 million to stake these nodes to prove that the information it's giving is true.
Yeah, I think my understanding is how it works, is that there's all these different nodes. It's going to be like a proof of authority, POA type consensus mechanism. So it's something you guys could go ahead and look up. There's some other cryptos that are using it. It's kind of like how Hyperledger works, proof of authority. But what's interesting about this is Facebook is actually doing a security token offering, an STO, whereby $10 million gets you, you know, this token, and that token gives you certain rights. You could write things to the blockchain. You can participate as a validator. So they're doing this STO as a fundraiser. They're raising $1 billion on that.
Wow.
100 companies, $10 million a pop to be a node on the first Libra chain.
So while they call themselves a decentralized network and they aim to be more decentralized in the future, you can see right off the bat, there's a very, very tiny amount of the population that even has an opportunity to be allowed to participate. And that's just in the beginning. Imagine 5 years.
To run a node, yeah. But yeah. Anybody can transact. Hopefully the idea is that anybody in the world can transact, but they're still going to have to follow.
Right.
Like, with the difference between Bitcoin or Ethereum, like these open, permissionless, censorship-resistant things, is that, like, you know, you it doesn't matter where you are in the world or who you are or what race, religion, creed, color, whatever.
Yeah.
I could send you money anywhere. And so obviously Facebook and like the powers that be don't like that idea because there's people in the world that they have sanctions against, right? Mm-hmm. Like we can't be sending money to Venezuela, you know,
right.
And vice versa. And so this is going to be a platform where it's super easy to use money and it's super, exchange money and all this stuff. But still at the end of the day, it doesn't get around one of the main ideas of why Bitcoin was invented is because we think that, you know, you should have sovereign control of your funds. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think it's a different coin for a different class of people. Right. Yeah.
It's not going to replace Bitcoin. That's for damn sure. In addition to that, we're talking about their new programming language, which is called Move, which is designed to allow people to write much more easy to create smart contracts that are a lot faster, a lot more secure. So that is one thing that actually is an innovation in this project. Everything else seems to be borrowed. Everything else that they're doing, from the cross-border payments, Ripple already does that, and so does 10 other things. Bitcoin, we've all... You guys heard of Bitcoin before? Yeah. So...
I think what is unique is how they're pricing the token, right? So it's asset-backed. So this is pretty unique, and they're going through, you know, all sorts of different leaps and bounds to get all these regulatory insurances and approvals, which it seems like they're going to be very successful in. But basically, when you hold one Libra credit, it's like holding a fraction of a dollar plus a fraction of a British pound plus a fraction of a government bond from Germany plus a fraction of a government bond from Japan plus like, right? So they're taking fractions of all these different things to minimize the risk and volatility. So you have the underlying asset and the actual price of the token, the Libra token, will fluctuate, right? It'll have a float, essentially. So it could be $1 one day and $1.02 the next day and 98 cents the next day because there's an active float. But with all these different assets that are backing them, it's used to minimize the volatility.
Yeah, so it's going to be a sort of stable coin,
mm-hmm.
but without being like Tether or TUSD, for example. The other thing that's really interesting about the tokenomics of this project is the Libra Foundation can mint or burn tokens at its own discretion.
Oh, really?
At any time.
I didn't read that one.
Based on their deposits.
They need the supermajority, the two-thirds of the power.
I think they only need one-third.
Two-thirds.
It's got to be two-thirds.
In any case, two-thirds would make more sense. But in any case, it's not a steady token supply. They're going to give themselves that flexibility to create or change it. So what this means is it is not a speculative coin whatsoever. It is pure utility, mm-hmm. with the exception of this other coin that's going to be used for a security token.
Right. So, I wonder where that's going to be really interesting. So something I didn't really think about until right now, and you just said that, is like if you look at the price of a seat at one of the stock exchanges, right? Mm-hmm. The CME or the CBOE. I think it was like $400,000 to $1 million for one seat. And so think about what people are going to pay for this security token to be a validator on the network. Like, I'm kind of curious if people are going to be flipping their seats, right? They'll be like, okay, I'll pay $10 million to be a validator and to set up a node and all this kind of stuff. And they have that token that they could essentially give to or sell for $20 million to somebody else to grant them now the rights to be a validator.
Yeah.
It's going to be an interesting, you know, trend that might unfold.
It will. So they're also going to, like Bryce explained, the bank deposits from different currencies, but the government bonds are thrown in there for an extremely low risk way of generating more interest aside from just the deposits. This interest is going to be paid to the node validators and block producers and early partners in this.
Right.
So the security tokens are going to gain value while the users of this token will not.
I like it. I mean, it's pretty smart.
It's interesting. As far as when this is going to be available, the early testnet is actually available now. They've been working on this for quite a while in the dark, and there's something that we can actually play with right now today at Libra.org. As cool or as terrifying as that may be. However, they're going to be doing a soft launch in the first half of 2020. That's their target.
They're going to have 100 validators. They're going to have their STO completed.
Yeah, but the initial version is going to be a permissioned blockchain. They don't know how to do permissionless yet, and they've actually admitted as much.
Yeah.
The full version is not going to be, or the full vision, I should say, is not going to be available until 2025. Is what their projections are. which I think is a very fair runway,
yeah,
given what they're trying to accomplish.
They're trying to like completely re-architect. They're trying to do what Bitcoin did, but just with a bunch of corporations.
Yeah, and they're also seeking a lot of feedback and community development and contributions as well. In addition to that, the Libra Foundation is also giving social grants to proposals to help further their project.
Mm.
So there's a lot of really interesting things that I found shocking and unexpected in this project. Going into it, I was extremely skeptical. Now I'm moderately skeptical. I think I can acknowledge the Libra Foundation as a new world power, in fact.
Yeah.
If indeed they are not silently backed by the existing financial structure.
It's like the G7, right? But or the G7 is...
the new G100 here.
Yeah, that's the new G100. Yeah. Like the global 100 powers that now are making up, you know...
Yeah.
It's like literally the dawn of a new financial age.
It is. It is.
It's pretty big.
Will it be benevolent or will it be predatory? We'll see. Of course, everything is sold as being positive and for the betterment of the world, but is that what's really going to happen? There's no way to know right now.
No clue.
But I'll tell you this much. We have much more say and a chance at contributing to making this project better than we do of making Bank of America or the International Monetary Fund change the way they do things.
Yeah, it kind of comes and like levels the playing field amongst all these other participants. And I like also that Facebook's driving this project, but they're going to like relinquish control of the project and just become one out of all the other nodes. Mm-hmm. So that's,
yeah.
You know, I think that they understand that people are wising up to the centralization and the, I mean, they fucked everybody over with all the privacy leaks and all that kind of stuff. So they're like, hey, you fucked us over with our social life. Now you want to take over our financial life?
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting because like, you can't just trust Facebook and you can't just trust MasterCard and you can't just trust PayPal or Coinbase, you know, whatever.
Right.
But can you trust them to all trust each other and like not to lie to each other? So it's like maybe you can't trust one untrusted entity, but what if you trust all these untrusted entities to trust each other?
And there's
it's like this web of incest.
Yeah. There's something called groupthink where on your own you may act in your own interest and be a horrible person, but if you're surrounded by a group of peers that are also equally powerful, you tend to adjust your behavior.
Yeah.
So we're hoping that everyone will hold one another accountable. The concerns I have about this, aside from the move language, which no one really knows if it's
like a new, it's like
not,
a new solidity.
Yeah, which you could say, you know, Eternity Sophia is as well.
Right.
So are they reinventing the wheel again, or are they really making a better wheel? We don't know yet. But everything else that they've taken so far is the best parts of the existing crypto technology. They took the open identity system from Civic or BAB to try and target the unbanked.
Matadium
to the future.
Did the same thing.
Yeah. So cross-border payments, Bitcoin and Ripple already have that taken care of.
I mean, every crypto really.
Yeah. DApps platform. I mean, I can't walk 5 feet down the street without tripping over a dead DApps platform. So is that really important? No. But if you're a DApp developer, this has to be the greatest day of your life, because now instead of making something that might have 1,000 users on Ethereum or 5 users on EOS, now suddenly your DApp is going to be seen by
Savage.
Facebook's user group.
2 billion.
2 billion. By Coinbase's user group. By PayPal's user group.
Uber.
And anyone who has...
Yeah. It's going to be nuts. This is like what blockchain is coming to.
Truthfully, so I'm very, very scared for EOS and Ethereum and any other DApp platform.
Yeah.
This has to be the absolute worst news ever for Cardano, who has nothing to show for 4 years of work.
Ever.
Yeah.
And will not.
I think this is bullish for Facebook. I think it's bullish for Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's pretty bearish for every other crypto.
Yeah.
Like this will, like, what, I don't know, what do you think? Like this is kind of going to take the place, I think, of all the other superfluous cryptocurrencies that are out there that don't necessarily have their own unique value prop. I don't know.
I am definitely more more optimistic than I think you guys are with Facebook. I think Facebook doing this is like a very, very positive sign for what I think we have to kind of like define what we want out of cryptocurrency and why it's here. And when we talk about borderless payments and transactions, I think we jump to a conclusion to think that, you know, we're going to block payments to people, or I'm sorry, to countries that we can't take payments to with this new system. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just a jump into a conclusion. If they are KYC and AML through the Facebook account, if you have access to Facebook, if you have a wallet, the Calibra wallet, why can't you make those payments? Maybe we are looking at this as like, oh, we can do this. It's still going to be like the banks. But maybe instead we should maybe give the Facebook and Mark a little bit more credit to say, maybe he is, you know, cutting through this bullshit up that we don't like. And this is a system that's so damn big already that nobody can stop it. And that's why he's going to work. And he went to, you know, talk to the Fed directly. He went to talk to, you know, the UK Fed directly. Yeah. And, you know, he's making those alliances within banks to skirt those government restrictions that we are fighting so hard about. So I think it's like, what are we looking at? I'm sorry, I'm going on a philosophical rant for blockchain and Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. But what do we want out of blockchain and cryptocurrency? We want to be able to go P2P. Can we do this? Do we want to money launder? Probably not. No. Do we want to give money to terrorists? Probably not. Do terrorists have Facebook accounts? Does Facebook know they have accounts? So are we going to get maybe the best of both worlds with this, to be able to do our KYC AML without worrying about the laws that we don't want broken with Bitcoin and cryptocurrency? And then once we do that, are people going to use this and look at this? And I always think that Bitcoin is a proof of product. Nobody knew what they wanted out of their money until Bitcoin came around and said, hey, we can do this. And they go, I didn't know we could do this.
Yeah.
And now, so now we have a next level. The next level is Facebook going, you can do this, and now you can do it with everybody. Because Bitcoin, 10 years later, you're still not doing it with people because there's still this barrier to entry. We talked about it yesterday. Mom and dad cannot keep up with this.
Yeah.
But maybe they can keep up with Facebook. So now you have a new proof of product. I think once you get the Facebook proof of product, you get into people's hands, you see how they can transact differently to people maybe indirectly in Iran because they have a Facebook account. And now what is Iran going to do? Shut down Facebook.
Right.
All right, fine. Then that's a solution. Now you're going directly from banking to governments. Now the people have a choice. Do they listen to their government or do they take the financial power to their hands? Now you have a proof of product, a proof of global society. Yeah. What's the next step? I think the logical next step would be now supporting Bitcoin more and supporting these other private, smaller cryptocurrencies. They go in the smaller cryptocurrencies, say a Ethereum or a Sumo coin or, you know, these other
anime coin,
whatever, you know, a MetroPass coin or whatever. And it kind of like have a more substantial case of saying, hey, you don't want your banks controlling what you're doing. We already saw what the government did.
Yeah.
Now you don't want the banks controlling. Now we have this other solution. You already know what your money can do if you want it to do it. So I think that it's like almost like an evolutionary process of the people figuring out what money can really do for them.
Yeah.
That's the way I look at it.
I like it. I also like the idea of being able to have like very easy exposure to all the different currencies of the world, right? Because right now, when I save, it's in the dollar bill or it's in maybe a Bitcoin or something. But the most people are like, okay, I save in my national currency. You know, some investors, Forex traders or whatever, you know, they might say, oh, for this next year, certain interest rates make me want to hold on to a peso over a Japanese yen or whatever. Mm-hmm. But what this is doing is it's saying, hey, we're going to kind of give you exposure to all of the government bonds and all of the, you know, bank deposits and all of the fluctuations in all the different Forex. So in a sense, that's like cool because it diversifies your risk a little bit, but also it diversifies your risk into a basket of hyperinflating currencies.
But I think there's two things that look about that. Wouldn't that, because these different currencies are in a basket of stability that people will be using, create more stability for these other currencies and bonds?
Like, well, what's happening is that like, the peg is staying the same, but basically the nodes, the people who own the security token, is taking, they're like taking the spread essentially. So they're actually making money on all the interest and all the balancing of trying to keep that peg.
Right, right. So the balancing, like
yeah, somebody's making money on
the,
this.
The government bonds of Germany are putting their bonds into like the system. It's being, you know, basketed together,
right?
Which is going to create not only stability for the system but also those bonds.
Oh, right? Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, because
we're actually creating a bigger stability globally in a global economic standpoint if 2 billion people are transacting with the stability of one coin and everything's basketed into one.
Yeah,
it's very good points that you guys bring up. There's another perspective to it though, and in the white paper it actually says that they fully intend to comply with regulations rather than skirt them. So all the existing embargoes and favoritism that is in place in the world is going to continue to exist. Plus, if you've been paying any attention to social media lately, you'll notice there's been a lot of crackdowns on actual freedoms and people on YouTube having their accounts deleted for no reason, just for having dissenting opinions. Same with Twitter, same with Facebook. Mm. It's happening everywhere. So It's not
happens to the banks too.
It's not just terrorists that are going to have their accounts removed. It's not just
there will be collateral damage.
Just dictators. I mean, but it's not just collateral damage. It's just like the Chinese social system, where if you don't have the right social score and people don't like you enough, suddenly you know how you don't have the ability to call an Uber. You don't have the ability to order a pizza.
So it's like what happened with all those back in 2017, all the Saudi princes, right? A bunch of them got their funds seized because a new guy came to power, and they're like, well, if it was Bitcoin, the only way you would be able to seize this guy's funds is by, you know, stealing his private keys, essentially.
Right.
And so that's the idea of, like, this permissionless censorship network. Like, yeah, of course, nobody in the crypto world supports terrorism. Nobody in the crypto world supports money laundering. Nobody wants these things, but it's the principle, like, there's collateral damage.
Yeah.
Is because you then take somebody who's innocent, and it's not, like, innocent until proven guilty. It's just, like, you say you're guilty, and then you have to prove your innocence.
Right. Yeah. It's more like pitchfork diplomacy at this point on social media. But I still think that's you're right that that's a slippery slope. It is, of course, speculation. But I think that the ecosystem that Bitcoin and Ethereum and Litecoin were trying to build that hasn't really happened yet because of the volatility. I mean, I don't give a shit who accepts Bitcoin or Litecoin or whatever. I'm never going to spend my crypto. I'm not doing it, you know? But if I was, you know, putting my U.S. dollars into a stable coin that was not able to transact across borders and to people, and I could send... You know,
it like serves a different use case.
I mean, even in the white paper, they said about sending remittance back to different countries.
Yeah.
To say, hey, we have our embargo is going to make people blocked about that. I don't think that that's the case if that's like in their white paper of part of their solution, because they are really going to change the rules of banking if you can say we can send remittance. Because even in like places where remittance is commonly sent, like the Philippines, from Hong Kong to the Philippines, all kinds of, either nurses and home care workers are living in Hong Kong and trying to send money back. The Philippines, you know, puts, massive restrictions on that. Is that going to skirt that? Is this going to be a barrier? Kind of like when we had,
Tyler Atkins.
Atkinson, yeah. Tyler, he was on, and he was like, I remember, you know, being a baseball player, and, you know, the people that were from, you know, Latin America or South America or what have you, or Central America, would want to send my remittance back, and I'll drive them to, you know, Western Union. It would be a whole thing, and they had, you know, two proofs of identity and all these different things. Insane. And he's like, it's insane. I mean, imagine if this just said, you know, all that. and they sent a Facebook chat to their parents.
It's going to be kind of interesting to see how, like, with the whole idea with sanctions, it's like, right, there's good people that live in Venezuela that, you know, have family here in the States that we just can't get money to because of this overall broad sanction of no money in or out of Venezuela, for instance, right? But maybe what the Facebook coin, Libra coin, whatever, can open up is like, hey, we have a KYC'd, AML'd, friendly person who has a Facebook account in Venezuela, you could send money now. It like kind of cuts out the sanction.
Right.
The thing is, because you could send from an American Facebook account to a Venezuelan Facebook account.
It wouldn't work.
Maybe.
And here's why. Because the reason the embargoes exist in the first place, and that's Venezuela doesn't want to sell oil in U.S. dollars.
Right,
because
all
they
oil
don't
is
take U.S. dollars for oil.
US
so
dollars.
Because they're not using the U.S. dollar, the pressure of the embargo and being cut off from the rest of the world is to literally make their country collapse and starve until either the people overthrow their leaders and they put someone
and they play by the
in
rules.
Place who plays by the rules,
right?
Or they're pressured enough and they give in to what the other world oil powers want. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's in place. It's not that...
But for Iran, for instance, maybe that was a bad example. Like Iran, it's like we're not allowed to send money. Well, I guess that's also for
it's the same
it's not
thing.
Just,
it's
yeah,
the same
it's
thing.
The
yeah.
exact same thing. It has to do with oil and U.S. dollars.
But then again,
so now here's a huge competitor coming into the U.S. dollar. I'm sure a lot of it's going to be backed by the U.S. dollar, but now it has its own rules and jurisdictions and different people in charge. If you're the president of the World Bank or the Federal Reserve or the CIA, for that matter, how do you read this white paper? Were you even consulted on this? I wonder.
I think that's why we see there's a lot of people from the EU, like you just said, the German Federal Chairman or something like
that.
Oh,
yeah. There's the French Finance Minister.
Okay, that's what it is.
Bruno Le Maire, but also the German.
Okay.
So you were right. So the French Finance Minister, Bruno Le Maire, publicly aired his concerns and says, this cannot and must not happen. He continues to call upon, you know, the big Central 7 banking governors to prepare a Facebook cryptocurrency meeting, essentially, in July, where they're going to try and say, They basically say this is bad because Facebook is going to become a shadow bank, essentially. Okay, fine. So they said all the regulators need to stay on high alert. And the other one was a German member of parliament. Yeah, was saying multinational corporations such as Facebook must not be allowed to operate in a regulatory nirvana when inducing these virtual currencies. So yeah, so
I mean,
there's some regulators that hate it.
So again, that goes back to our point. Like, so just because there is an embargo on a certain country or regulations against a certain country, it looks as though these regulators are a little nervous that it's going to undercut their authority, and people still are going to be able to transact without the government, you know, being involved.
Yeah,
it seems that way.
Yeah,
if you have a Facebook account, and so then what kind of monumental task would it be for Facebook? If you can go through all their platforms, if it's a WhatsApp or Instagram or Facebook Messenger or anything else that they own, to regulate who gets what, how much of what, through a smart contract on the blockchain with limited block sizes and transaction speeds. F*** the network then.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
just shut it down. So I think that just because of the technical and logical limitations shows that that the regulation that the governments wish they could have just aren't possible. The only thing that we can actually do with this technology is go P2P transaction. We barely can do that on anything scalable.
Yeah, I mean, the way they talk about this, it sounds very futuristic, and they give themselves a 5-year timeline. Given
it's the most realistic thing of any white paper ever.
Really, it is. It truly,
you guys
truly
are 5
is.
Years out.
Yeah, and they potentially have like what, like $3 trillion of financial backing between all their partners.
All the companies.
Yeah, so they're not going to run out of money to make.
How
this
much
happen.
Money do they have?
I would guess $3 trillion. This is not an actual calculation. It's just throwing a number out of the side of my head.
Just with all the 100 consortium members.
Oh, yeah. Okay, gotcha.
Their market cap or whatever, their free cash flow.
Yeah,
maybe
a ridiculous amount of money compared to the Bitcoin Foundation or Litecoin Foundation or even EOS for that matter.
Mm.
So let's do this, guys. Name 5 cryptocurrencies that you think are going to benefit from this. And 5 that you think are going to completely die.
Okay, that's actually a great question. So I think that the proof of work coins will prevail in this circumstance. So coins like Bitcoin and Zcash and Litecoin, who have all of their halvenings coming up very soon. Monero, which has a fractional block reward reduction every block. I think coins like that are going to benefit from this because they have a completely different value prop, right? Proof of work as long-term aggregation of value in these protocols. But I think coins like Tron and EOS and Cardano, like all these smart contract platforms that can do this, like that are just, you know, quote-unquote decentralized platforms, they're not going to be around, I don't think, in light of all this. I just don't think so.
I think I agree with you. I think that these platforms that have been struggling, and I think the Jameson Lott paper, you know, much love to Jameson. What a good dude. But I mean, when he was saying it, he's like, you know, their protocol didn't solve any of the problems of Ethereum yet. You know, these problems still exist. Block size still exists. And then when they talked about renting space, that was part of it. Like, you may have to rent block size. He's like, well, then when does that get too expensive to rent that space to transact? You know, these are still, you know, very important discussions that they're going to have. So I think that because of accessibility, the protocols might be in danger, but I don't think that unless they have some very, very big leaps of technology, that it's really going to be a big threat. The only threat that's going to be there is going to be the access to people, and the access. But then I'm also thinking, what about like the proof of stake, like especially like delegated proof of stake or masternodes? Like they may have an issue too.
Oh, absolutely. I think so, because this is essentially one big DPoS network or one big masternode network.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think all those guys are going to be in jeopardy. Like
especially if we get a bull. Like if you want, like if it's going to say get up to like $250 or maybe $500,000 to run a masternode on Dash. Like what? When would they just say this?
We're
going to pull together and run a Libra.
Right. Yeah.
I mean,
I think there's going to be so much developer activity on the Libra stuff. I mean, they'll be able to pay top quality developers. And like, I remember when EOS was raising all the money for like EOS VC, like with Novogratz and stuff, God bless them. But what has really come of that? We got Voice.
What's Voice?
Decentralized. It's like Steam at 2.0, essentially. You know, they're going to be able to pay lots of developers. There's going to be so much activity on this network.
Now, I will say I love the Steemit platform, but it's not necessary. I do just fine on WordPress and Medium, as I did on Zynga 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, it's not reinventing anything, and it doesn't need crypto.
It's just too, honestly, Steemit is just too complicated.
There's
like the editor private key, there's the publisher private key, the author private key, the private key to take out your funds, the private key to...
In my opinion, I completely agree with you guys in terms of the coins that are going to succeed. I think this is a very interesting time for Ethereum. It now gives them a chance to look away from EOS to something bigger and say, well, before we release 2.0, it now has to be better than that. So it's a very interesting opportunity, and if they don't beat it, it could be absolutely disastrous. But I think if so much in crypto relies on Ethereum, it's still going to be okay, at least for the next 5 years. However, I think the real, real losers in this case are the other cross-border payment solutions. Ripple's going to get hit very hard. Bitcoin Cash is going to get hit very, very hard. Stellar is going to get hit very hard. And then any of these little ones like Crypterium and 10X and things like that, they're going to go completely extinct.
Yeah. I think it's going to be hard to drive Ethereum extinct in the short term because of how many entrenched interests there are holding Ethereum, right? So there's going to be price support for that, just like how Bitcoin has its... you know, holders of last resort type support. So I think it's going to be hard to drive Ethereum back below $85.
Going back to their white paper, one thing they said on page 2 of 12, they said that that all these other cryptocurrencies were poor store value, poor medium of exchanges. Do you guys agree with that statement?
I don't really agree with that statement. Like, I think store value and medium exchange mean different things to different people, right? So to me, what do they mean? They might mean something different. So I'll explain, like, what is store value to me? Something that in the long run, you know, over a 5-year yield curve or a 10-year yield curve, this asset is deflating rather than inflating, right? Mm-hmm. So with Bitcoin, I'm like, yeah, it's a store of value because against the dollar, the idea is and is proven to be that over the, you know, the log curve, it goes up in price and it stores value. Whereas the dollars by design are uncapped and always the supply is always getting greater.
And
so you're losing
nothing.
Backed by the U.S. government and the trust in the U.S. government, the army.
Backed by the U.S. military.
Backed by nukes. So there's that. Okay, medium of exchange. I said when we ever go out to lunch together, we always pay each other in crypto just because that's what we want to do.
It's true.
I go out with my friends. I'm like, hey, you don't have a Bitcoin wallet? I'll give you, you know, some Bitcoin to pay me back in Bitcoin because I want to get you guys familiar with this medium of exchange. Yeah. So Bitcoin, although the block time is a little slow, I tend to not use it that much for like payments between my friends. I like to use Ethereum just because it's quicker.
Or the Lightning Network.
Lightning Network. So I've been using the Lightning Network a lot and it's super user friendly. But I mean, I think it functions as a medium of exchange and it functions as a store of value. What about you guys? Like, what does that mean to you? What's a store of value to you?
I think it's a great definition for store of value. When my nephew was born, I put 0.1 BTC in a wallet for him. And I told my brother, here's your son's college fund.
Wow. Bold.
Yeah.
Bold.
And he said, what do you mean? I said, in 18 years, this is going to pay for your son to go to college. I paid $300 for it.
So wait, I'm wondering what goes up higher, college tuition or Bitcoin prices?
We need to chart that.
Honestly, that does need to be tracked.
I'm curious about that.
I wonder if there's like a chart for
hopefully he's not a prodigy and needs to go to school early.
Right.
Education price index. There's got to be an index for the price of education.
And a medium of exchange, I really think that is super integral. So wallet to wallet, we can simply scan a QR code and all my friends will pay me in Ethereum for dinner or Bitcoin. Or, I mean, I haven't even gotten into the Lightning Network yet, truthfully, because I don't care. Like, I know that if my friend is going to send me a transaction, I don't give a shit if it clears in 3 seconds or 3 hours. It doesn't bother me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once he clicks send on his phone, you know, I trust it's going to go through. And that's acceptable because we're friends rather than a merchant and I'm a customer.
Right.
So that's fine to me.
So that was one of my first problems with the white paper. I mean, as we already discussed, what this new protocol, new cryptocurrency, quote, cryptocurrency, as that's probably debatable, is for. But this is my first real problem with the white paper, is to say that that these other cryptocurrencies or digital assets are poor store value. And I think that they almost negated like their whole argument, saying that, you know, they're able to mint coins and that it's a stable coin. So we have to figure out what is a store value. And I think a store value is making sure that your money doesn't go down in value to what it can purchase, and you can purchase more with your, or the same amount or more with your currency over a period of time.
And I don't think Libra's going to do that.
And I can't see it. Yeah, like, I can't see
no
it.
Way.
Would either of you guys invest in Libra on the open market?
I would hold it. Like, well, what do you mean? Like, buy it to hold it?
I mean, if they said,
why not?
If they said right now you can buy Libra on Coinbase, would you pick some up?
Absolutely.
I probably wouldn't. Like, unless there was, like, right now. Well, like, right now there's no utility for it yet.
Yeah,
but
true.
Maybe in a couple of years or something, if it's like, hey, this is going to be a lot easier to use than your credit card. Like, sure. But to me, it's like, that's actually who's really at risk here is like all the credit card companies and stuff.
Well, they're all teaming up. So
I mean, exactly. Now they're teaming up. So it's like,
all
if
of them, though.
If you
Discover
can't,
and American Express have to be shaking
people,
right now.
People still use Discover?
Yeah.
Stop. Stop.
They do. I see their commercials all the time.
They're trying. They're still trying. But yes. Anyway, so would I get it? Would I to play with it? Of course. This is kind of my job.
It would be.
This
fun.
Is what I do. I mean, it'd be fun. But you know, man, they're gonna mint coins. Who knows where the value is gonna come in? It's gonna be asset backed. Who's gonna be dumping assets in there? Every time a new partner comes in, there's gonna be more assets, more minted coins, more. So they're either gonna keep a value of one Libra equals one Libra, as we want to see one BTC equals one BTC, or it's gonna just totally. Everybody, like the U.S. dollar has been to everybody else's net worth,
and I wonder
being stagnant over years.
And I wonder also, like, this is my biggest concern, and this is just me being crazy as always, or something in my head just doesn't make a whole lot of sense right now. But imagine they build out this network, 1 billion or 2 billion or even 3 billion people use it, and then there's some type of bug or oversight or, you know, mismanagement that causes a huge glitch or potentially even like a long collapse that takes weeks to fix, or they need to do a chain rollback of 500 million transactions. What do they do in the situation where one of their apps causes something like a $500 million hack like the Dow did on Ethereum? What do they do in that situation?
Yeah, they're going to roll it back and devalue.
And
absolutely.
What's the reaction of your grandma? My father, the Alabama church pastor who's, you know, guiding everyone through all this because they, you know, still don't even have internet at their house. What's the reaction of people going to be towards cryptocurrency when the first big problem happens? Because that is inevitable. Bitcoin's had tons of them.
Mm-hmm.
We just made it through.
So I think that this is when we come into what Andreas Antonopoulos said. And did you go to F Denver?
No.
Did you?
We had our team there, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Did you watch Andreas?
No.
So when Andreas was speaking, he said, I think, one of the most important things I've ever heard anybody say. And when he talked about rolling back the Ethereum with the DAO hack or what have you, or and forking it off, he said, once you are able to change the code, the code is king. Once you're able to immediately change the code, you're going to have problems. It goes from saying, I can't do something because it's out of my hands, it's in cryptography, it's the code, to I won't do something.
Right.
And once you say, I won't do something, you have every government in the world, including the American government, including the power of the American government, as we said, telling Facebook and dictating what they can do with their with their network. And that's where the problem's going to be. So every time there's an issue, then we're going to legislate against you because now you're being corrupt. You're
aiding terrorism, whatever they want,
doing illegal shit, money laundering, anything they want to make up is not only there's a person that says, I won't do it. Now, how does that work?
Do you remember Apple ran into this situation where there was like a mass murder in Florida or something?
Oh, with the phone.
And they got his iPhone. They took it to Apple and said, we needed to decrypt his password.
Yeah.
We needed to decrypt it. And Apple
said, they couldn't
do
it, right?
Apple said, we can't do it. Mm. And the FBI said, bullshit, 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 until Apple said, well, we won't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, you better figure it out and you better do it.
Right.
And they stayed there. We never heard what happened after that. But that just means we can assume
the FBI found the back door. And remember, that's when McAfee put out the video on YouTube that shows you how to do it.
Right.
Really?
Yeah.
Did he really?
Mm-hmm. He's like, this is how you do it. He did it live on a YouTube video.
Oh my god,
that's crazy. I gotta say, that's the world we live in right now.
But so, I mean, this was already 4 years ago or something.
Yeah. But history always repeats itself. So as soon as, you know, a payment sneaks into someone who then goes into Venezuela or Iran and starts distributing those Libra tokens from his massive wallet and using some location verification technology with it, God hope is not XYO, to then track this terrorist and say, oh, he then spent this money he acquired legally in an illegal place. We need to roll back that chain and ban him from the Facebook network or whatever it may be. you know, that's going to be crazy. And where does the line get drawn?
That's a really good point, man.
It's too much power in one group's hands is my concern.
See, but that's the thing.
Whoever that group is.
Exactly.
Do they have the power? That's the problem. Do they have the power? Is it up to a consensus of these two-thirds of node runners, validators?
Yeah.
I mean, and how does the government go to them and say, we need you to validate what we want you to validate to make a choice on our side? Now, that's different than saying, do they have the power? So I think that we didn't see this in the technical paper. Or the white paper. Who has the power to change this? If it's not the validators, who's going to be the validators? And governments can't say attack 100 people saying we need two-thirds of you guys to do what
we want. It's like
is there a backdoor?
It's like how? Well, yeah, there's a backdoor to the American government. It's called lobbyists, right? Like that's what
I'm talking about. A backdoor to the protocol.
Oh, backdoor to the protocol. Yeah, it's all open source.
Yeah, besides the validators, there's no way to change. Is that correct? I mean, that's what I see so far.
I mean, if all the validators vote on upgrading the protocol, right?
Which looks great so far, but
I don't think that there's like a user-activated soft fork that they could do where it's like if all the holders of Libra
you brought this up earlier though is you can take this security token that acts as a seat and resell it.
Yeah.
What's to stop every congressman from buying that? Or a mandate that now these corporations have to sell it to a U.S. entity or an EU entity, or they have to be given first chance to buy these seats. It's easy for a lobbyist to pass a law that says now this new world bank structure, this new financial ecosystem, has to include at least 30% of world governments involved in it. And now suddenly these people are forced to sell their seats.
Well, I mean, isn't that just saying, like, trying to force the government or passing a bill for the government to try to run 51% of the Bitcoin core network?
Right. Yeah, it's the same
idea. Or going to Bitmain and, was it Ampool, and forcing them to have 51% of the hash power and changing the code?
If it would work, they would do it.
I think would it work now?
No, because anyone can run a Bitcoin node.
But we do see these mining pools. I mean, yeah, since everybody has. Yeah. That would not work, to be honest.
It wouldn't work.
No, it wouldn't work.
They could seize a Bitmain warehouse,
mm-hmm.
but then people would just stop using their pool and go to another pool. Bitcoin literally can't be shut down, otherwise they would have. They've tried literally everything they can do to do it, and they can't. So they're coming out with this great distraction from Bitcoin. So all the problems that Bitcoin has from normal users, from easeability of transaction to prices always fluctuation. Now they fixed these two problems or features, and now deploying it on the most popular social networks and used companies in the country.
You think this is a conspiracy?
I do think it's a conspiracy.
Holy shit.
I do.
It's gone clones.
100%. I don't know who's really behind it, truthfully.
I don't know either. It's kind of interesting. What if Satoshi's behind this all?
I don't know. I definitely think there's
Satoshi's
a conspiracy
right
here. I'm not entirely sold that the current world powers aren't involved in at least approving of this, because it allows them a way to maintain some control versus without this entity, they still just have to deal with Bitcoin, which is in very serious threat of becoming the world reserve currency. And the U.S. has literally destroyed entire civilizations to prevent that from happening.
Yeah. I just don't see why everybody's fighting against Bitcoin so much.
Because it's a power.
I mean, maybe because somebody can explain that to me. I don't know why people wouldn't just legislate for it, try to make systems around it, and leverage it instead of fighting against it.
I don't think...
Because then it undermines the power of the issuing country. Right?
And I don't think that...
Because people, America uses the U.S. dollar as leverage for certain things. So if you undermine your leverage, mm-hmm. then you undermine yourself, right?
Right.
So they say, okay, well, Bitcoin fundamentally undermines everybody's leverage. So, but whose leverage do you undermine the most? It's the highest ranking powers,
which is
the
why
US.
There's no Bitcoin included in this asset backed.
I think that would be an interesting thing. Like, okay, who knows what ends up coming of Bitcoin 10 years from now and Facebook coin 10 years from now. But what would be interesting is if Libra did part of its reserve had Bitcoin backing it. That would be really cool.
It would, and I would feel a lot more confident that it's going in the right direction. But how insane or politically targeted do you have to be to not include Bitcoin in your portfolio today?
Official SQK says, stay skeptical, pizza.
Stay skeptical.
He knows.
Do we have any other comments in there?
He knows.
No.
One comment. Thank you for that.
Well, two says amazing discussion. We need more of these, so.
I think this was a very helpful discussion. I learned a lot.
Me too.
Thank you guys for your guys' discussion.
Thank you, guys.
Any closing notes?
Here's my closing note. My closing note is, let's welcome any technology that's going to do the goals that we want. It's cross-border payments, and then we have to look at sovereignty. And if we have to take a step, long-term goal with this, and these are one of the steps to get everybody massively educated to understand what money can do for them, how it should operate, and then push them to Bitcoin in the future, then let's take that step. And of course, we're going to have bumps along the way. But I would not want anybody to stop this because it's not what they want now.
Right.
Because I think that we can still get what we want. We just might have to take different paths. So that's my final statement.
My final statement is, don't leave your wife just because a hot girl walked down the street.
I already have
Bitcoin that has solved these problems. We already have Ethereum, which has solved these problems. We already have BAB, bank account-based blockchain, which is making an open identity platform for people to get legal UK bank accounts. We don't need what they're building to change the world. We already have that in place. So don't just abandon every other crypto for Libra.
I'm going to take that analogy to the next point. Then it's like, don't marry the first girl you see.
Yeah.
Ooh.
That's pure too.
Who's the first girl you saw? I bet it's Bitcoin.
I bet it's Bitcoin. I mean,
actually, you want to know what the very first crypto I ever had is? Graft.
Never heard of it.
Exactly.
Don't want to talk about it. Never heard of
another quick transaction currency.
Swipe right,
payment
regret,
that is
regret.
Going to die.
My final statement, I think that the next 6 to 18 months, 6 to 12 months is going to be the year of proof of work coins. So I think proof of work coins like Monero and Zcash and Litecoin and Bitcoin and still Ethereum, but it's transitioning to proof of stake, so I'm going to count it out of this because they're knocking it off the roadmap. I think we're going to see wild price action in these because we have a lot of the halvings coming up. We're going to see a really big supply side reduction. So I think with all that going on and plus, you know, maybe whatever, lower interest rates, we'll only see. But proof of work coins are kind of my bet this next cycle. So I'm Bryce.
This is Pizza Mind.
Yo.
You know Matt Aaron.
I hope so.
All right, we're peacing out. Thanks for joining us, guys.